What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, the psychology of injury. We're talking with Robert Andrews, working for the Institute of Sports. I was thinking about the letters. It's T-I-N-S-P. Robert,
sports
tell me.
Performance.
Institute of Sports Performance. Yeah, see, all these initials throw me off. We're talking with Robert Andrews from the Institute of Sports Performance. I have it right here in writing. He's been there, the founder, for 11 years, but before that, working 15 years with high performance athletes, and he's kind of specializing in sports psychology consulting and in dealing with those athletes that are physically able to return to play, but mentally they can't get past the injury. So, you know, maybe just an ankle sprain and maybe ACL tear or leg fracture, but we're going to talk about how we can use that as an athletic trainer and how we can get services or help getting our athletes back to play. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Robert Andrews. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Robert Andrews. So without much further ado, Mr. Andrews, what is the Institute for Sports Performance?
Well, we have three of us that have backgrounds in sports performance psychology. It's me, Robert Andrews, Taft Singletary, who's a Georgia guy who's here in Houston, and then Ashley Eckerman, who used to be a really successful high school swim coach who I tried to get into my business here 5 years ago, and she finally came on board. And so we've got a really good thing going here, and we work with not just injuries, but we do a lot of work with performance teams. We go out and do presentations with parent talks and work with coaches and teams and organizations. I do a lot of work in the sport of gymnastics. That's one of my niches. I do a lot of work in volleyball, soccer. It's seasonal, you know, whatever's going on. Right now it's volleyball, baseball, softball are firing up. See a lot of cheerleaders that have backward tumbling issues, which is really interesting. And then I see a lot of injuries, you know, broken ankles, a lot of ACL injuries. I have a great relationship with one of the orthopedic surgeons here in Houston, and he and his PT staff send a lot of ACL athletes, injured athletes this way. Been with the Houston Texans for 5 years. I do a lot of injured reserve work with their players. Was with the Rockets 2 seasons ago. That was a one and done, but that was really cool because we went to the Western Conference Finals. Do a lot of work with HVU, University of Houston. And then athletes all over the country, Canada, Australia, and have managed. After this most recent Olympics, my brand kind of went global because I worked with Simone Biles and Lori Hernandez and Simone Manuel, who were all gold medalists in the Rio Olympics. And that kind of changed everything for us around here. We kind of hit warp speed at that point. So it's been a fun ride.
All right. So tell me just a little bit more. What is the number one thing that you see, or number one thing somebody's going to call you for?
I would have to say it's a really good question. It's always performance. You know, I'm not meeting my full potential. My son or daughter isn't meeting their full potential. They're struggling with dropping time in swimming, or their hitting is horrible. But the first question I always ask is, have they suffered any serious injuries? And usually I would say 50%, 60% of the time they go, well, yeah, what does that have to do with it? And I kind of go, well, it has everything to do with it. What was their injury? And they said, well, she's a soccer player and she went to get a 50-50 ball and the girl slid into her and broke her ankle. Well, has she been the same since then? Well, now that you mention it, no, I hadn't thought about that. Or, he tore his ACL when? About 18 months ago. Well, where is he now? Well, he's playing, but he's not the same. Well, then you hear the light bulb go off with these parents. And so I always ask for injuries. That's one of the first questions, whether they're coming in for performance. Or sometimes they know they need help with an injury, but that's the first place to always look because that takes up so much energy in the brain, and the brain trying to compartmentalize all that stored up negative traumatic information around what happened during the injury. And we'll talk more about that as we work our way through this. But usually performance is the gateway in, and then it bridges into injuries.
I got you. And now you mentioned that you deal with high performance athletes and you said you see a lot of injuries. Are you actually treating or dealing with the physical injury themselves there?
That's not my cup of tea. You know, that's athletic trainers, physical therapists. They're about range of motion and strength and conditioning and balance. And we strictly deal with the mental and emotional and psychological impact of the injury. And the old model used to say, well, you'd read it all the time, you know, so-and-so has been cleared at 100% and they're ready to play. And that was just the physical clearance that they would get. And we're trying to change that paradigm that it's, yeah, physical is certainly important, but the mental and emotional aspect, did you get over the injury? Was there trauma related to the injury? I had a girl in today, a gymnast who was doing a round off back handspring and broke her arm. And she had a, what we call a holographic imprint or image in her mind. She said, my arm looked like one of those pool noodles, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what she looked down. That's a pretty traumatic thing for a young athlete to look at. So we look at the impact that the injury had on them and begin the process of helping them work their way through a full recovery, not just a physical recovery, but a mental and emotional recovery where they totally trust their knee or their ankle or their arm, whatever it is. There's just no doubt about it. They go out and they can run and cut and throw or whatever they need to do.
All right. Well, let's just discuss some cases. We kind of talk about somebody that you've treated. And then as you discuss the steps and the process that you went through and some of the barriers have overcome, then me and Daniel will throw out some questions.
Okay. Let's see who pops into my mind here. College quarterback. Okay. Tore his ACL, struggling to come back. Wasn't the same as a pretty traumatic injury. What I look for is I ask them a question. When you think about the worst part of your injury, are there any images that pop into your mind? And this guy had like six specific images that were related to the injury. Actually, every ACL, if as a trainer, if you're working with an ACL injured athlete, they'll always tell you they remember the pop, right? I remember the pop. Well, the pop is a sound, but it's also a holographic imprint. The brain takes pictures of the experience. And that image is loaded with information, sound, pain, emotion. I have athletes tell me they remember what the grass smelled like when they were laying face down on the field, the lights, how quiet the crowd got. The brain gathers all that information and holds on to it. So we look at holographic imagery. What is the brain struggling to process related to the image that represents the worst part? This quarterback had the pop, laying down on the field, face down, getting carted off the field, being in the locker room, getting his knee examined, hearing the team doctor say the words ACL, being at home on the couch in pain, and he and his girlfriend driving by the football field watching his team practice. Those were all imprints that his brain took pictures of that represented the worst part of his experience of tearing his ACL. So we go to work using processes called eidetic imagery and eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which teaches the limbic system, which is the part of the brain that manages high stress events. It teaches that part of the brain how to process all that unintegrated and unprocessed information very, very quickly. With ACL injuries, I see remarkable turnarounds in just two or three sessions. So it can be that fast. So that's what we did with this guy. We went to work, and we didn't have to work on all those images. We just worked on the two or three big ones. And then once the brain figures out what we're doing, it begins to process and integrate and file all that information away on its own while they're sleeping and dreaming and things like that. The brain wants to return to balance. We teach it how to do that. And then it goes out and it works through all the other imagery. And this particular quarterback said, when we were done, he said, I've never seen the field so clearly. I don't even think about my knee injury now. And he went on to play professionally, still playing professionally now, but and doesn't think about his knee any.
All right. So then go ahead, Daniel.
Sorry, Jerome. So when kids come to you, or especially college kids come to you, is it the parents referring them and bringing them to you, or is their athletic training referring
with
the
universities, parents? It's usually either the athletic training staff or a coach that recognizes there's something going on. If it's high school kids, it's usually the parents find me or word of mouth or a doctor or a PT will send them my way. But the college level, it's usually the athletic trainers.
Okay, talk a little bit more about the process. I know you said eidetic processing.
Eidetic imagery.
Imagery, okay.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, like the girl that was in this morning, that she was doing a round-off back handspring where they run across the floor, you know, both hands on the floor, do a round-off and then a back handspring. And when she planted her arm just buckled, and that was the image she had in her mind of her arm just looking like that. And I've had three knee surgeries. I tore three ligaments and a cartilage in my knee when I was in high school, and I had really horrific images of my injury. And so I taught this girl eidetic imagery, which is a process where in slow, super, super slow motion, almost frame by frame, she went back through that round off back handspring, planted both arms, completed the round off back handspring without suffering a break in her arm, and then moves through that. And then she has homework to do that so many times a day for so many days at particular times of day. And by the fourth day, she won't see that negative image in her mind anymore. That begins the process of teaching the brain how to process trauma very, very, very quickly. And then that sets us up to do the eye movement desensitization work, which uses light, eye movement, and sound to access the right and left hemispheres of the brain very quickly, which teaches the limbic system how to open up and process and integrate information that's just been sitting there. That's why if you have an athlete that's doing, like you've probably heard this story before, you have an injured athlete, tore their ACL, they're doing fine, and then they look at the schedule and they see that they're going to go back and play on the field where they tore their ACL. What happens to them?
Not all the time, but they kind of freak out and pause.
A lot of times they freak out, right? It's because the part of the brain starts firing, going, we're not going to let that happen again. And so the limbic system begins to kick in and it stirs up emotion and physiological responses. Their chest gets tight. Their stomach gets in knots. They're hesitant. They can't plant or cut the way that they were planting and cutting before they saw that field on the schedule. So the limbic system in the brain gets activated, and that's when they struggle. It's not about confidence and command and excellence anymore. It's about they go into protective mode to protect themselves from getting hurt again. And it's not a voluntary response. They're not choosing to do that. It's the brain actually saying, I'm not going to let you do this, or I'm going to create hesitation because I don't want you to go out and get hurt again. That's not the case with every athlete. I mean, look at Adrian Peterson. You know, he came within 9 yards of breaking the NFL rushing title the season after he tore his ACL. But he's a freak when it comes to his rehab and his mindset. But not everybody's an Adrian Peterson. I certainly wasn't. When I hurt my knee in high school, I was terrified of getting hurt again. And that set me up for other injuries because I was in a protective mode.
As you're fixing those holographic images, I understand it's a mental game, but from your standpoint, are they just working on fixing the images in their mind, or is it fixing that while they actually perform the movement?
Well,
and I'm not trying to steal your secrets, but
no, you're not. You know, I do this talk all the time. I don't care, because you can know the secrets, but you have to know how to do. You have to know how to implement it, right? We work on the actual experience of getting injured, right? And then we work on any present fears that they have. I can't plant and cut. Like I had a baseball player that threw a curveball and felt a pop in his elbow and had to have Tommy John surgery. Couldn't throw a curveball to save his life, right? So we worked on the pop, feeling the pop in his elbow. And then we worked on all the fears that he had about throwing a curveball now. We processed all that information. And then we project them into the future. See yourself on the mound. And we're doing this work with lights and eye movement and sound. And what they're doing is we're integrating negative information from the past experience when they got hurt. We're integrating negative information about their fear of getting hurt in the present. And then we project them into the future. It's almost like we're uninstalling old negative software programs and then reinstalling really positive, passionate software programs in the brain. That's the best way I can explain it. It's cutting edge stuff. You know, it's not just, you know, get tough and suck it up and get over it. You know, that's so old school when there's technology like this that actually teaches the brain how to get rid of old software that we don't need anymore and implement really, really dynamic, powerful programs in the brain that create success, high levels of success.
Talk to me a little bit more about going back to the girl with the elbow, or if she broke her arm, the homework that you sent her home with. What does that homework look like?
Well, like I said, she re-scripts the play where she got the round off back handspring. She re-scripts that in a way where she doesn't get hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a soccer player running down the field, and I hear this from soccer players all the time. I'm running down the field, I accelerate to go after the ball and cut, and I go this way, and my leg goes that way, and I felt the pop. I hear that story all the time from soccer players, right? And so what we'd have that soccer player do is go back to the field in their mind and work through that same play, that same cut, plant their leg. But this time the leg doesn't pop. They maintain the integrity of the joint. They move through that in slow motion, and then they take a deep breath and come back and then run through it again in regular speed. And then they have to do that exercise so many times a day, so many days in a row, and at particular points of the day where the unconscious mind is most easily influenced And I work with kids from, you know, Washington. I talked to a college football player in Florida that broke his tibia. I had a running back in Washington State tore his ACL. I never met him in person, but we did the – there's a lot of questions that I ask them. There's 6 pages of questions that they have to complete, which stirs them up. You know, they come into my office almost in tears because these questions get them stirred up and get them thinking about their injury and feeling about their injury in a way that they haven't before, because athletes are taught to compartmentalize, you know, push it down, push that beach ball underwater, suck it up. But the questions that I ask bring all that information to the surface. And when they come in the first session, we're ready to work. And I've worked with athletes all over the Australia, Canada, all over the place that I never meet in person, but we just do the workup. We review their questions, which stirs the unconscious mind up and the limbic system. I teach them eidetic imagery. I'd say 90% of them do great. And then there's that 10% that might need to do the eye movement work at some point, which I prefer to do. But the eidetic imagery is a very, very powerful process.
All right. So as an athletic trainer, I'm just curious, how would I be able to check and know if that athlete is doing their homework besides saying, are you doing it?
Why wouldn't they? You know, the fact that you would have to check means you have an athlete that's not committed to getting better, right? And I don't deal well with athletes that don't buy in. You know, I've fired athletes that don't work the process, because I don't like to work harder than the athletes I work with, if that makes sense. And if they're not working harder than me, I have a hard time helping them, you know, because I'm used to working with athletes that have a very high level of buy-in and want to get better. And if I say, let's go bungee jump, they would do it if it helped them get better, you know.
The athletes will say, besides the return to play and the sports performance side of things, do you do a lot of consulting on the front end for the kids, athletes, kids, patients, however you want to term it, that have either anxiety or depression following their injury or following surgery?
Well, that's all part of it. You know, that's part of my questionnaire. When it comes to my injury, my level of anxiety is none to severe. Depressed, none to severe. Angry, frustrated, hopeless, despair. That's part of the questionnaire. And that's the evaluation we can see when we start out where they are. And usually all their answers are circled on the 8, 9, 10 to severe range, all the way down the page. And then when we're done, I give them the questionnaire. I said, now go back and answer these again. They circle not at all to ones, because all those stressful emotions, the anxiety, the despair, the hopelessness, the frustration, the isolation, all that has moved over to the other side of the page, which means they've processed and integrated all the negative information associated with the injury.
Well, I'll ask an obvious follow-up, but the kid, from your experience, the kids that you see that start this process with you at the beginning of their injury, when they first show signs of depression or fear or anxiety regarding anything, I would imagine those kids have a much easier progression than the ones you see at the very end of their release.
Yeah. And I just sat up in my chair because I get excited of this question. The real kicker, and I don't get to see this very often, is to see a kid before they ever have surgery, because they already start having fears come up about, what if I wait, irrational fears, some of them. What if I wake up in surgery and I'm not fully unconscious and they don't know it? What if I can look down and see them working on my knee? What if they operate on the wrong knee? What if I don't wake? You know, they actually tell me that a lot of them had these fears. And so if we can teach them how to process their fear of surgery, when you think about surgery, what do you see? Well, I see them poking around in my knee. Well, if we can teach their brain how to process the trauma before they're ever traumatized by the surgery, they go into surgery like this. I've actually had athletes come back and say, my nurse asked me if I had had surgery before. And I said, no, why? She said, well, you're so calm. And I had a little mini case study on that years ago with the University of Houston. I worked with their women's soccer team, and they had 6 ACL injuries in 13 days that year. Well, with those 6 girls, I saw 3 of them before they ever had surgery, and I saw 2 about 6 weeks to 2 months after surgery, and 1 I never saw at all, okay? The 3 that I saw before surgery flew through the surgical process. They were ready to embrace rehab and get after it. The 2 that I saw after surgery experienced quite a bit of pain during surgery, had some work to do to get over that, but then they slid into gear and attacked their rehab and did just fine. The one that I never saw before was cleared, is 100% ready to play, and freaked out and said, I want to go see him now. And we had a lot of work to do, because she had gone through the trauma of the injury, the trauma of the surgery, going through the rehab process, carrying all that baggage with her all along the way. And when she was cleared as 100%, now she was ready to work. So we had a lot of work to do at that point. But if I can catch them before they ever have surgery, it's a game changer. I had a total knee replacement surgery 5.5 years ago from my high school knee. You know, my knee got to be bone on bone, and I just kept having to eliminate, well, you can't run. Well, you can't play basketball. Well, you can't play tennis. And it got to where I'd bike, and then I lost my range of motion. I couldn't bike, so I took up walking, and then it hurt too hard. When I couldn't walk, I said, it's time to get a new knee. So I had a horrific image of what they were going to be doing to my knee, right? You know, sawing my knee, my femur. And so I self-treated myself and processed the images that I had about my knee replacement surgery. And mentally and emotionally, I just sailed through it. Physically, that's a big operation. That's a big surgery. It took me 6 months to get through it. But mentally, emotionally, I went into surgery fine. A really cool story with that. When I hurt my knee in high school, my high school position coach was with me when I went into surgery, and he was there when I came out. And then he stuck with me all the way through my rehab process until I came. I hurt it in the end of November, and I was playing football the next August with 3 torn ligaments and a cartilage back in the 70s, which was the dark ages of knee surgery. So when I got ready to have knee replacement surgery, I called him just to thank him for being there all those years ago. And he says, well, when's your surgery this time? I said, November 28th. Well, where is it? It's at Methodist Hospital. What time? I have to be there at 7:00. Well, I'm going to be there for this one too. So all those years later, my high school coach is there with me when I had knee replacement surgery. And that cool? That's a pretty cool story, huh?
It is pretty cool.
There's not enough coaches like that out there these days, you know?
Definitely not.
Robert, I got a comment from the live chat. Sean Reedy, a normal co-host here, he mentioned a baseball pitcher with a facial fracture, or just a baseball player with a facial fracture, whereas everything they do is now affected, not just that one plant and turn with a soccer ACL injury, but every single movement, every time they look, every time they turn or look up or down. Is it any different in that versus the knee?
No, it's the same exact treatment protocol. And that's a great story. I worked with a kid from the University of Houston years ago that took a 95 mile an hour fastball to the face right here. And it just crushed this whole side of his face. They said his season was over, maybe his career. And, he got over to see me and we worked through the treatment protocol. And he said, I want to go play again. And they were like, well, no way. And they talked about it and they put a plastic, bar, I guess you'd call it, almost like a face mask over his helmet to where nothing could hit him in the face again. So he goes back to play his first game back, and they were playing the team that he got hit against. It was A&M, and they went up to A&M this time. He got hit at Minute Maid Park in that classic that they have every year. They went up to play A&M. His first at bat, he hits a home run. His second at bat, he hits a home run. He got walked his third at bat, and his fourth at bat, he hit a double off the wall, almost a third home run. And he got conference hitter of the week his first week back. And they said it was a miracle. You know, they thought his season was over, and he came back so strong. And he said, I've never seen the baseball so clearly. So it's the same treatment protocol. And that's a true story. I mean, I've got that story on my website under my testimonials. You know, it was an awesome experience. I talked to the guy last week. You know, he went and played in the minor leagues. The Astros drafted him. He played in the minor leagues for years. And I'm still in touch with the guy. You know, he's married, living a great life.
All right. I'm going to see if I can put you on the spot here. I have one of my varsity soccer players here with me. He, in junior high, he hurt his hip. He said he didn't ever have surgery. Would you be able to just kind of sample some of the questions you might ask? I mean, he played pretty well this year on varsity soccer, but just let's kind of go through this and see what it looks like. Would you be able to do that?
Right there. Actually, it's this one. This is a worksheet that we go over with every injury, and it's a series of 8 questions. So I would ask him, when he thinks about the worst part of his injury, what's the image that pops into his mind when he thinks about the worst part of it? And every athlete has that image. Right, so what would your student say?
Could you repeat the question, please?
When you think about the worst part of your injury, what image or images pop into your mind that represent the worst part of it for you?
Not being able to play and being on a wheelchair or crutches. Not being
so being on the sidelines watching?
Yes.
Would you agree that for an athlete, that's the loneliest place in the world?
For an athlete, yes, because it's just waiting and not participating in anything.
Yeah.
And it's something that you just want to do that you love, but you just can't.
Yeah, and every athlete that I talk to, that's one of their images. I'm on the sidelines on crutches. I'm sitting in the stands watching. You know, so yours is being in a wheelchair and being on the sidelines, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. What's some kind of a negative thought that enters your mind when you look at those images? A negative or limiting belief or thought about yourself when you look at those images? You got to be vulnerable around all your classmates there. I'm kind of I'm flipping it and putting you on the spot a little bit here since you ask, huh?
Yeah.
But it's called a negative cognition, some kind of a limiting or negative thought that enters your mind when you think about being in a wheelchair or being on the sidelines watching in crutches.
I mean,
I understand that normally this would be kind of done in private, or maybe you have some time to think.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough question. I'll tell you what I typically hear. I'll never be the same. What if I can't come back? Can I ever learn to trust my hip again, my knee again, my arm again? What if I lose my spot on the team? Those are typical questions. So without putting him on the spot anymore, we work through a series of questions around that. Well, what would you like to believe about yourself? I'll come back better than ever. Well, when you think about being in a wheelchair and I'll come back better than ever, does that feel congruent? Well, no, it's like a 1 on a scale from 1 to 7. What do you feel when you look at the negative image and think about, I'll never be the same? Well, I feel sad and angry and frustrated. And how upsetting is that to you on a scale from 0 to 10? With ACL injuries, it's always in the 8, 9, 10 range. 0 means it doesn't bother me at all. 10 is the most upsetting thing you can imagine. It's always an 8, 9, 10 with an ACL injury.
Mine was
huge. Yeah.
About an 8, because, like, I don't know where I just get shocking. I just get, like, shocking pain right up my hip. Or if I try to lift it up, it just hurt it a lot, and I could barely move, and that's when they assigned me to the crutches.
Are you hurt now?
Oh, no, I'm fine now. The injury happened in 1st of February last year, and I got off of crutches in July, so it was about like a 6-month injury.
Wow, that's a long time.
I wasn't able to do anything at all.
Now, was it a specific point in time where you planted and felt something, or was it something that happened over time?
It happened at a specific time. I was in a match, and I guess I wasn't warmed up well. And when I got ready to make a pass, I heard a pop in my hip. And once I tried to stand on it, I just felt like I couldn't resist it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to go get x-rays, the doctor told me that that when I heard that pop, it meant that I dislocated my hip bone because I tore my quad with it.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's
pretty serious injury. Well, did you hear me describe the eidetic imagery where you go through that play in slow motion?
Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
Excuse me?
I would suggest you do that imagery exercise where you run through that play on the soccer field and you make that plant. And instead of feeling your hip pop, you move through that cut and move right on down the field as though nothing happened. But do that in super, super slow motion and then take a deep breath and do it in regular speed. And then work on that about 5 times a day over the next 3 days. And what you'll find is that negative image will begin to fade away and you won't think about it nearly as much.
Yeah.
But it takes discipline to be able to, if you have to put a reminder on your phone, that's what I always suggest to these kids. And they're always on their phones. Well, put a reminder on it. And then when your reminder goes, oh, it's time for me to do my imagery. It takes about 30 or 40 seconds to do those 2 steps. And you do that 5 times a day. Do it before you go to bed at night, first thing in the morning. Today's Wednesday. By Saturday, you'll see that image completely different in your mind.
Yeah.
It's a really cool process. I appreciate you asking and putting yourself on the spot in front of all your friends and teammates there.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. So obviously one of the practical ways we can help as an athletic trainer is by taking care of the physical injury. But another thing that, like, even right here, we were just sitting and waiting for Jose to answer, but I think that's an important thing that we can do as athletic trainers is giving them an opportunity to speak and to think rather than filling them with the answer. What are some of the other ways that you think that athletic trainers can help practically with the psychology of the injury?
I think you have to start looking more at warning signs. Usually you'll see a change in personality, like if they're funny and outgoing or they're a leader or they're dynamic, or they're a caring teammate. A lot of times they'll withdraw, and you start looking at warning signs like their personality changes, they're moody, they're irritable, they seem more withdrawn or frustrated, or they're hesitant to do certain rehab skills or drills or techniques that you want them to do, shutting down, isolating. And those are all red flags that they're really struggling through this process. So put that on your lens of perception and start looking at your athletes through that filter. I think that's the first thing that you could take a look at.
Even if some athletic trainers, I would hope that all athletic trainers do that. I realize that's probably not the case, but even when we recognize issues and we take those issues to their parents, a lot of parents are kind of slow and hesitant to take their kid anywhere. It's just their doctor, us, maybe their physical therapist if they have one. They don't want to add another professional in the mix. So how can we, besides advertising what we know, how can we present this better to parents and give them a better idea of what you and people like you do?
Well, send this podcast out to all your parents of athletes. One, educate. You know, that education is what it's all about. You wouldn't believe how many parents, like I said earlier, they call me about a performance-related issue, and I said, well, has there been any injuries? Well, nothing serious. Well, you said nothing serious. What do you mean? Well, they did break their ankle, but it was 2 years ago. Well, have you seen? They don't think that way. They don't think. They just see an injury as physical in nature, and if they've healed physically and they've been cleared to play, then they should be fine. That's the old school, and our work is to educate. And I go around schools, and I do parent talks all the time on how to parent athletes, and the last 15 minutes, I slip in a real powerful presentation on overcoming the mental emotional impact of sports injuries, because I think it's underappreciated, undervalued, you know, and it's part of my mission in life is to educate coaches and parents and athletes and organizations about how powerful this part of the process is. So education, you know, everybody looks at it. Everybody has their phones, you know, watching a podcast like this that's powerful. You got power in your hands right now. You can do something to change that. You know, I hope I get a link to this, and I'll put it on my website and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and educate people. That's what we can do. And I think it's cool that you trainers are open to having a dialogue like this today and sharing that with your association.
All right. Obviously you've had a lot of success. You have any stories where what you're doing has not worked and then maybe a reason why?
Yeah. Angry, defiant athletes that don't want to be here. That's the time it doesn't work. And that's been in all these years, maybe I can count that on two hands, thank goodness. But most athletes want to get better. You know, most athletes want to improve. But the rare times where they come in here and their parents force them to be here, or their coach or trainers say, you got to do this. And they come in and their arms are crossed and they're not giving me any information and they're not answering questions. And after about 20 or 30 minutes, it's like, I can't help you. But that's less than one tenth of one. It just doesn't happen very often because they want to get better, you know? And yeah, they're nervous and anxious when they come to see me. The girl I saw this morning with the noodle arm was real nervous when she came, but when she left, her eyes were bright and shiny and she felt some hope, you know? So there is that resistance. And then when you start throwing the word psychology into thing, there's that stigma that goes with that, which we're trying to change here, do our part to change that. So, you know, again, it's about education. I think that's the answer.
Related topic, but maybe a little different. From my history this year, managing concussions, there are a lot of kids that have a lot of subconscious issues that come out, whether anger issues, depression, anxiety, things that were in effect before that were just suppressed, get either manifest or get a lot worse following concussion. Do you see something similar?
Big time, yeah. And this is a sensitive topic because the the current model with concussions, and it's a very necessary model, is that it's a brain injury and the brain has to rest as it does. I've had concussions. You know, I fell skiing a few years ago and hit the back of my head on a hard patch of ice, and I came back and I had a headache for days, so I know they're serious, man, serious deals, and we do have to rest the brain and turn the brain off and get off of our screens and laptops. But I think part of the deal there is I think the brain struggles to process information at the level it did prior to the concussion in some cases. Because like I had a kid from out in your school district, I won't mention names and I won't mention schools, but he took an elbow to the head and had a concussion, right? Before his concussion, he was a math whiz and he would make his own lunch in the morning and get himself ready for school. A very responsible kid takes an elbow to the head. He has a concussion. Math grades went down to C's and D's. High level of frustration. He couldn't figure out what he wanted to eat for lunch. He'd get angry in the mornings. So his mother starts taking over making his lunch in the morning and getting him out the door. Well, it happens out that I helped a teammate of his with an ACL injury. They said, can you work with concussions? I said, yes, because there is a mental, emotional, and psychological component to concussions. So I did my concussion protocol with this kid. His grades go back up to A's, but most importantly, his mother comes into the kitchen one morning, and guess who's making lunch again? The kid, because he could process information at a fast rate. I had a girl, a college softball player, came to see me just a few months ago because she was having horrible anxiety. And I'm sitting there talking to her, and she has a vacant look in her eyes. She's not tracking my conversation. She keeps looking at me with this puzzled look on her face. And finally, I said, have you had a concussion? And she said, yeah. How did you know? And I said, well, it's obvious. You're not tracking the conversation. You have a puzzled look on your face. And she had been cleared through the concussion protocol, but she had all that leftover anxiety because she couldn't process information. Her brain wasn't working fast enough. So the limbic system gets activated with a concussion, just like it does an ACL injury. And when you calm that part of the brain down, I would like to measure this. I'd like, if there's some doctor listening, I would love to measure increases in blood flow and nerve flow in the brain after this treatment protocol with concussions. And give them my number. Because I've asked three doctors in Houston to research this with me. And two of them got mad at me. And one of them thinks I don't know what I'm talking about. Isn't that crazy?
Very.
But it works. It works. The only time it doesn't help is the athletes that have really severe headaches. And that's a whole different animal. But if they're having cognitive issues and processing issues and they just don't seem the same. Like I had a girl, a gymnast. I work with a lot of gymnasts. She came to see me a couple of months ago. And because she just wasn't acquiring skills fast enough, she wasn't moving through her levels fast enough. And I started asking her questions. And sure enough, she had a concussion 3 years ago and still had consequences and symptoms 3 years later. And her mother was like, God, why doesn't anybody know about this? And I was like, I don't know. So again, I'm challenging. If there's anybody out there that wants to do research on this, call me. Let's do it. Because I've talked to some of the I've had concussed athletes that I work with whose parents are connected to some of the top concussion centers in the country, and they've measured the results that I've gotten. They've measured them, and they're like, we just want to do this. So I get frustrated with that because you got something that can help. I think it can change a paradigm, but nobody wants to listen.
That's all right. Between Jeremy and I both, we can make some calls. I can't promise you anything.
Oh, I know. But anything you want to do to help, I appreciate it. Because about 80-85% of the time, I could show you before and after pictures of an athlete when I saw them before we treated them for concussion and after, and they look like different people. Dull faces, dull eyes, and when we're done, their eyes are bright and sharp and clear, and their cheeks are red because we've increased blood flow.
All right, so you said you saw a kid from Seattle or from Washington, a kid from Florida. These people, you just do this just like we're right now doing a video call, or is it just really a phone call or what?
FaceTime or Skype, yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yep. And I go through this injury questionnaire. We identify all the triggers, the targets we need to look at. There's a questionnaire I have here that asks what all the images are, and then when we break down the most impactful image, I work through this worksheet with them. And that just brings the focus in where we know exactly what we need to work on to teach the brain how to process the most significant information around the injury. And then in about three sessions, boy, they're great. They're flying.
Very interesting. I've admitted before, I took psychology in college, the growth and development class. The first section, the first test, I got like a 98 on because that was all anatomy. After that, it was talking about emotions and the limbic system. And after that, then I was like, oh, wait, I got a B. And then the next test, I got a C. And the professor called me and he's like, hey, what's going on? I was like, well, hey, I was killing it in anatomy, but you did all this other stuff. And so, yeah, that's just not something I'm very good at. And
well, that's why you're over there and I'm over here, because chemistry and physics and pre-calculus and all that kicked my rear end. Now, what's real interesting about that is I was a good math student in junior high and early high school, and then I got tackled and fell back on my head like that in ninth grade. And after that, I couldn't do algebra or pre-calculus very well or any of those maths, but it turned the part of my brain that has a strong intuition and the ability to systemically work through things with injuries. And like I was in the oil and gas business, I was a land man. And I could take a land title all the way back to Spanish land grants like that. And that's what I do in my work. I start in a symptom now and I work backwards and find where they got knocked off course. But that's how my brain works. But it doesn't work with chemistry and physics. And oh man, that stuff drove me crazy. But that's not how my brain's wired up. But it sure is wired up to help people ignite their passion and maximize potential and get over injuries and motivate and inspire teams and leadership and all that. So maybe that concussion was a good thing for me all those years ago, just like my knee injury was in high school. You know, it kind of knocked me off course, but it sent me in this direction where all day long I get to do what I do.
There are several orthopedics in our area that I've spoken with recently that mm-hmm. are looking at changing their overall return to play guidelines.
Oh, really?
And involving other professionals. Instead of it being a standard 9-month return or 12-month return for ACLs, and instead of it being a set step-by-step process for rehab, they're looking at sports psychology and nutrition and other subsets to include in their return to play guidelines. Do you think that'll ever happen?
Well, I know one doctor in town that it already is. And he refers me a lot of ACL athletes. And I don't mind saying his name, and he wouldn't mind either. It's Walt Lowe. He's the Texans orthopedic surgeon. He sends me a ton of ACL injured athletes. And every August or September, I go talk to all of his physical therapy residents and have the same conversation we're having today. And so they refer me ACL athletes. So they've already integrated into their system.
Well, that was going to be my guess. My other part of this, do you ever think it'll be, if they can change the overall return to play guidelines, do you think everything would get covered by insurance?
Oh, gosh. You just opened up a Pandora's box.
It's a loaded question. I get it. But
well, it should be. But, you know, that's the problem with medicine right now is insurance has all the power. We don't have the power. Doctors don't have the power. You don't have the power. Insurance companies do. And that's why they get to decide what's paid and what's not paid and what's covered and what's not covered. And if it is, and they start paying out on it too much, then they change their plan. They change their policy.
But between, say, Dr. Lowe and his people and just other research, if we can change the model for return to play, do you think insurance would follow suit?
Yeah, I would hope so. I would think they might want some kind of research, which Dr. Lowe and I are doing. We've been researching the psychological impact of ACL injuries for 3 or 4 years. You know, if an athlete goes to see him, they fill out that questionnaire that I use that I created for our study. So he's already doing the research. We're already doing the research. And so I would think for them to pay on something, they want to see if there's validity. And there is. Absolutely.
All right, Robert. When should we consider referring somebody to you?
Before surgery, in an ideal world, you know, if they want best outcomes. And if that doesn't happen, because I know, well, with ACLs, there's really that you got to let the swelling go down and you do your prehab and all that. If it's a broken arm, they might have to do surgery that night. So that might be impossible. But before surgery is ideal. And then after their pain has kind of started to diminish some and they're starting to get into the rehab process or they can get around in a cast without pain, maybe, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks after surgery is a good time because they're not loaded up with pain meds and anesthesia and all that. And like their brain is clear. We can start getting to work at that point. And then once we do that, it's just kind of let's work through the injury itself. And then kind of as we need to, like the girls who went to that field knew they were going to go to that field. We had to do some work on that, you know, or I had one player who was fine on, he was an offensive lineman every play, except when he had to pull and plant with his right foot and cut up field. That plant was the only thing that bothered him. So we refined it down to one little step was the only thing holding him back from being his best.
Gotcha. All right. So if we do want to refer somebody, then what's going to be the best way to get a hold of you?
Our phone number here is 713-522-2200, 522-2200, or you can Google Robert Andrews, the Institute of Sports Performance, or I think we have sportspsychologyhouston.com, but I would do the Institute of Sports Performance or Robert Andrews Sports Performance. It'll pop right up. Or TINSSP.com is the easiest way if you want to email us. And there's a newsletter we put out. You can sign up for that. I have a really powerful a performance video series I launched after the Rio Olympics. There's information on that about there that has a whole video about sports injuries and what great championship teams do to be great. And there's 6 videos related to performance. So there's a whole wealth of information on there. And we have a blog that we write on when we're not too busy around here. So I appreciate you making that available to the public like that.
Not a problem. It is currently March, National Athletic Training Month, when we're recording this. So, Robert, I would like for you to thank an athletic trainer by name, and then you can give just a brief story of why you're thanking him. And then Daniel will do the same, and I will do the same afterwards.
I want to thank Doc O'Shea at the University of Houston. He really understands what I do. We have a great relationship, and he has a keen eye for being able to recognize when an athlete could benefit from what I do. And we've had a great relationship now for 10 years.
All right, Daniel.
I don't know if I can thank just one. If I thank one individual person, the rest might get mad locally. So I would thank my last teacher at Howard Payne, Mike Terrell, completely changed my viewpoint of how to be an athletic trainer, how to run a program, how to treat my fellow students at the time, and how to treat kids. So I'm a much better athletic trainer from knowing him.
Very good. And then John Herman, he serves on the GHATS board here in Houston, but I've been able to hang out over the last couple workshops. We kind of carpool, or me and Daniel actually crashed at his crib when it was down by his house this year. And so just that friendship, the relationship, and, you know, get to learn a little bit more. He's a little bit more seasoned than me, not much, but just hanging out with other like-minded athletic trainers is just fun. So, John, thanks for just befriending me. So,
can I add one?
Sure.
That's you, Daniel. When my son was a junior in high school, we were playing in a tournament out at Katie Taylor High School, and he felt something go on with his elbow, and I went over there, and the parents' worst nightmare was seeing you working on his elbow. But it was also very, very comforting to know that he was under your care. And you didn't know me. You didn't know my son. But you stepped up as a professional and looked out for him. And, you know, the good news is he just needed to do some rehab on his shoulder. But I've thanked you before for that. But I wanted to publicly say that, you know, you were such a classy professional in that moment. And we talk about that sometimes. He still remembers you. So, you know, you're what athletic training is all about. So I just wanted to thank you publicly for that again.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, NATA 2017 will be in Houston at the George R. Brown Convention Center. I'll be at the Frio Hydration booth, so find me there. Just come say hi. Again, Frio Hydration at NATA 2017, come find me. Also, I'm looking for any of the international listeners to be guests, to hear your story, to share your story. So contact me. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the ways to get a hold of me there. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Robert Andrews. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Robert Andrews. And then there's also ways to get a hold of me there. If you're listening internationally, I would like to hear from you. Robert shared plenty of information and ways you can get a hold of him. So feel free to reach out to him. Maybe have him come talk to your students, your athletes, your professionals, even if you're in the industrial setting and those are your athletes as an athletic trainer. See what his services can do for you. Without much further ado, that is a wrap. Thanks, guys.